Welcome back to Fishnets and Philosophy. This is your host, Mix Bell Marigan, and once again we are embarking on a journey into the question, why horror? Where each week, myself and a different guest do our best to just unpack this fun, entertaining question. So before we jump into the discussion, I am welcoming back to the podcast the fabulous Ariel Powers-Schaub. So before we have our discussion, if you can just introduce yourself, kind of what it is that you do, and just your general connection to horror.
Yes, thank you so much for having me back, Belle. We did our Saw deep dive, and truly, that was one of the funnest discussions I've ever had, and so it's always a pleasure to talk to you. I write and I podcast a lot for, other people's outlets. I write for Ghouls Magazine, and I'm the admin assistant for Ghouls Magazine. And I also write for Moving Pictures Film Club, and I have some writing coming out with Hear Us Scream pretty soon. So really, you can just find me around the internet talking about my love of horror and different horror movies and doing deep dives and, just trying to trap anyone into my discussions who I can.
Brilliant. I love it. I think that's something that all of us horror fans can relate to. We're just like, please talk to us about horror. We need to talk about it. So please talk to us. But brilliant. Well, I like to kick each of these discussions off with this first question, because every horror fan has an answer to it. And I just love hearing the different films that people tell me. So for yourself, what was the first horror film that you remember watching, and then spinning off from that? Because sometimes the answers are different depending on the horror fan. And what was the first horror film that made you a fan of the genre?
Yeah. Well, I don't have a specific memory of the first horror film that I watched. And so I liked the way you worded it. What's the first one I remember watching? Mm-hmm. As I've mentioned, sometimes before, horror has always been in my life, and I truly do not remember a time before I was like trying to read and watch all the horror stuff that I could. And it was very welcome genre in my family. And so it's always been there. A couple early memories I have with it. So The Labyrinth is not a horror movie, but it's certainly creepy. And I remember the experience as a child of watching The Labyrinth, and there's a scene in the beginning where there are some Muppet goblins in a dark room that are trying to hide, and they keep popping their heads up and then hiding again, and they're sort of laughing and giggling. And that scene scared me so much, but I kept wanting to watch it. Like, I kept wanting to go back to that part and get scared again. So I have that memory of being like, oh, I'm scared, but this is fun, and I want more. And then another horror film that I saw really early was the TV miniseries of Stephen King's It from 1990. We recorded it off TV onto VHS tapes, and I think I was allowed to watch it because it was made for TV, but it's pretty scary. It's pretty dark and scary. So I have fond memories of watching that since I can remember. So that's got to be one of the first ones.
I love that. And I like that as well, that you that actually leads into one of my other questions, because you said The Labyrinth is not a horror movie, because one of the questions I love to ask is what's your personal criteria for what's considered a horror film and what isn't? Like, do you have clear lines, as in one side is horror, on the other side it isn't? Or for you, is it more kind of fluid and flux?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I don't know. And I am so, like, If someone says something is horror, I'm pretty much never going to argue with them about it. Like if someone came back to me and said, "No, The Labyrinth is a horror movie," I'd be like, "Oh, okay." Partly just because I am agreeable, but also because I don't know how to define it. So for me, I think it's something that either scares me or is trying to scare me or is playing with the horrors of the world. So there's plenty of like movies and books and things that have horror elements or horror sequences in them, but maybe wouldn't be classified as horror. But I think anytime we're getting close to fear or we're trying to touch that feeling or we're trying to reach for those feelings, I think you can make an argument that something is horror.
No, I like that. And when you said that, it's like hard for you to define it. Like, just as I've been having like each discussion for this series, like, it's definitely become very apparent that trying to define it is almost like reducing it to something, as in, like, so if you
Yes.
come up with like, this is what horror is, then that means there are so many films or shows that end up being left out of that definition, and therefore it's like, where do you put them? So, like, as someone who is very much genderqueer and non-binary and hates any form of a binary system, I find categorizing horror films also to be just silly, because it's just like, just you don't have to define it. Like, if it's horror to you, then it's horror. Like, that's kind of like my kind of like takeaway, because at the end of the day, what scares us, what makes us feel uncomfortable, is the subjective experience. Like, we all have
Absolutely.
our own things that get under our skin. And like, that actually leads into one of the other questions, which I love hearing everyone's different perspectives on this. But it's funny, before I started the series, I used to think like, oh, this was just someone who's like terminally online, just on Twitter, just likes to moan. But as I've been talking to people, I've realized, no, there actually are people out there in the world who think like this. But there is this type of attitude of someone will say, insert film name wasn't good because it did not scare me. And I want to know what you think about that. Do you think a horror film has to be scary to be considered quote unquote good or effective?
Absolutely not. big time no to that. First of all, what is scary and what is good are completely subjective ideas. And what scares me might not scare someone else, and it might be a great piece of media or not. And it's like I can be scared by things that aren't quote unquote good. And I can watch a really good movie that's in the horror genre that doesn't scare me at all. Like, I think what people mean when they say that, or maybe what I hope they mean when they say that, is I was hoping to be scared and I wasn't, and I'm disappointed. That's a feeling I can relate to. Sometimes I hear a movie's really scary and I go to watch it and I don't get that feeling from it. And I'm like, dang, I really wanted to be scared this time. Like, sometimes I'm trying to find a horror movie that does scare me. And so I'll be disappointed if that doesn't happen. But does that mean it's good or not good or that someone else wouldn't be scared of it? Absolutely not. Like, I think that's such a reductive way to talk about art and media and just to be like, good, not good, scary, not scary. My objective truth is my opinion on the matter. It's just like, I know Twitter does sort of encourage hot takes because you get attention and engagement from them. And also, there's not a lot of room for nuance because you have limited characters. And so I think it's sort of a cycle where people act a certain way on social media and get rewarded for it and then continue to act that way and possibly act that way outside of social media too. But I never, as someone who loves to talk and write about the genre for literally like all my free time is spent on horror. I would hate the idea of reducing it to like good, not good, scary, not scary, check a box and move away. I, for example, I'm very afraid of space, outer space. I am so freaked out by the idea of it. I'm scared about what happens to a body in space. looking at the vastness of it makes me feel a little sick. And that is not a universal fear. And so, like, there's a show called For All Mankind, which is about, it's like historical fiction about space travel. It's a really good show. It has some of the scariest sequences I've ever seen for me that nobody else might find scary. And that doesn't mean it's better or worse for any individual viewer. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't think we should reduce discussions of art to such tiny little boxes.
Yeah, because that's what it is. It's like really limiting, and as you said, it's reductive, and yeah, it's just boring as well, because it's just like, if you end up going like, oh, a film has to be scary to be good, then you could be like basically erasing so many films because they
Yes.
weren't scary to you, and it's just really just that's what it is. It's boring. But I like what you said about, the hope is that someone is going into it looking to be scared and is disappointed that they aren't. And like, this is something that I've been thinking about a lot, like, as I've been having these discussions. And like, I think film fans in general, but specifically horror genre fans, like, I think there's like a lack of self-awareness of what we're bringing to films we're watching, in the sense that, horror fans, to most of us, watch mostly horror. So in a
Yeah.
way, we're very desensitized. So like,
Exactly.
you could watch like a film and it could have like, a tagline of like super, super scary, but that tagline is written by someone who doesn't watch horror. So of course it's going to be super, super scary to them. But if you're someone who
Yes.
only watches horror and can kind of predict when a jump scare will happen, or it's all these different things, and you come away from it, oh, that didn't scare me, it's like, well, are you aware of the fact that, you expect the tropes, you know what could come, and therefore what is an actual effective jump scare or an effective horror sequence doesn't have an effect on you, but that doesn't mean it isn't effective. And I just think there's, yeah, I think like that's what it is. It's like people are going in looking to be scared, and it's almost like they build it up in their heads and they're not kind of prepared to go, there's a chance it might not scare me because I watch a lot of horror. And I think people should just be more aware of themselves when they're engaging with films.
Absolutely. I completely agree. I mean, when we've built up essentially a callus against what scares us, of course it's going to be harder to scare us, which makes it so much more exciting when we find something that does, but that doesn't mean everything else along the way wasn't good. I also think, and this is maybe just like me yelling, shaking my fist at the youngsters, I don't know, but like I also wish people would sometimes put their phones down when they watch a movie. Like, I think the way we engage with film has changed over time as we have so many more distractions. And if you really want to be scared by a movie, like, I think you need to immerse yourself in the film, whatever that means for you. And I'm not, I mean, I'll live tweet stuff sometimes too, so I'm not saying you can never do that. But if you want to watch a movie for the first time and really try to get into it and be scared by it, I think you need to give yourself over to the movie for the 90 minutes or at 2 hours that it's asking of you, and just see what you can get out of it from doing that.
100%. That's such a good point, which is something that, like, I think that links in with, people being aware of what they're bringing to a film. Like,
Yep.
in like, it's why I just like, wish more people would, particularly for horror and stuff like that, go to the cinema for horror. Now, obviously, there's cases where someone can't or blah blah blah, so that's different. But if your only option is watching at home, then make it an experience. Like, put the phone away. You don't need it for the X amount of time runtime for the film. Most horror these days is like, probably around 90 minutes. Some films are, 2.5 hours, but like, the 90 minute ones are the ones that, most people seek out anyway. So that's an hour and a half of not having to scroll Twitter or Facebook. Like, to be honest, that should be a blessing to most people
Yes, it's a
rather than a
break.
negative. It's a break,
Yeah.
yes. But yeah, I just think people are not aware of themselves, and that includes just being distracted by social media. And This actually leads into one of the other questions I have, and I want to know what your perspective is, but just talking about the way social media as a thing is kind of influencing how we engage with media, but also how we engage with ourselves. Like, it feels like social media has like brought in this really weird new regressive kind of prudish wave of like, hey, we're Victorians again, where we can't talk about sex or, show nudity or anything like that. And like, there's just basically any form of self-expression is curtailed. And I feel like that is now bleeding into the films and media we're getting, that things seem to be also very like desanitized and desexualized in other many ways too. And I want to know what you think about that. Like, for me, horror has always been the genre that's kind of like put a middle finger up to that type of movement, has always been the rebellious stepchild. But now it feels like, at least with mainstream horror, it's also moving that direction. And I want to know what you think about that.
Oh, that's a complicated one. So I think at the heart of it, as at the heart of all things in our capitalist world, is money and what makes money. And if I know filmmaking is a business, right? It would be beautiful if it was just an art and people could just do whatever they wanted, but people do it for their livelihood and so they have to make money. And I totally no problem with that. Like, I get it. But I do think what that means is a lot of times, there's hardly mid-tier movies getting made anymore. It's like big blockbusters and independent cinema for the most part. I remember a time when there were more mid-tier movies getting made, and it felt like that could be a really creative space too. So I think part of it is going to the box office makes money, and that's why a lot of horror is PG-13 so that it can get more people in to see it, or 15 certificate, whatever the lower rating is, so that teenagers can come pay to see your movie. So I think that's part of it. I also think like the discussion about it online is really interesting to me because I think a lot of things we hear on social media have probably been people's opinions for a long time. It's just now they have a platform for them and they find each other and they amplify each other's voices. And so I wonder if it truly is that there are more people who want this sanitization of media or if it's the same amount there always have been. I don't know. But I do know that when you say something out loud and you find the people that agree with you and you all both stir each other up, it's like it can make you double down on your position because you're like, wait, people agree with me. And I think social media often encourages this idea of anyone who disagrees with me is bad and wrong. So the line just gets drawn harder between people, and that ruins the discussion. It makes discussion impossible to say, okay, well, you don't think there should be sexuality in movies. Tell me about that. Tell me why. Like, I would love to have that discussion with someone, but there's not really a place for it. And, my circle of friends doesn't feel that way, so I don't know who to have that discussion with. And so I think it is sort of like a vicious cycle of what makes money, where are the loudest voices, how are they getting amplified? And what gets the views on streaming? So I don't know if I really answered your question. I think that there is a lot to it, and I do think that horror still is hanging on to the middle finger it gives to mainstream media. I think it always will be. It has to be. But I do think there's going to be quite a variety of streaming services give you an opportunity to see something really extreme. And the box office big blockbuster films are going to be more family friendly. And so there's a possibility that we'll get a lot of really diverse stuff in between if we remain open to that.
Yeah, no, 100%. I like that. And yeah, so much of the points you made about the way like social media encourages those drawing the lines and people just be, becoming emboldened in their own positions and their own views, and like on both sides of like the aisle. Like, it's not just one side is like this, both sides are, and it's kind of really frustrating. But kind of circling back to what you said about, we're in a capitalist world and filmmaking is a business at the end of the day, and it's about money. That kind of brings up one of the questions that I think, like, this is something that every horror fan has to kind of reconcile with when it comes to engaging with horror media. But I want to know for yourself, like, how do you feel about censorship? Like, do you think that there are lines that can't be crossed when it comes to what's represented or portrayed on screen? Or do you feel that, you know, art is art and everything should be permissible? Like, what's your feelings on it?
Yeah, I love this question. I think my lines are everybody should be able to consent and be consenting. I would like us not to harm animals or environments if possible. I know sometimes it's hard to say what exactly is harming an environment, and we could derail on that, so I won't do that. But like, thinking of Cannibal Holocaust specifically, like, let's not do that again. And animals can't consent, so please leave them alone. And I think children should be protected by child labor laws. But if they have adult supervision, then I think that there are ways that that can be done fine. And like, I have no problem with child actors in, conceptually. So I think I don't have very many lines, and my lines are along ethical lines for me, which maybe they are for everybody. I don't think if you're working within an ethical space like that, I think you can depict anything. And it can be done well or it can be done poorly. And depending on what you do with your art, it may or may not be exploitative or not, or, done well or not. And there's whole discussions you can have about that, but I can't think of anything that I would say this shouldn't be portrayed in film. Maybe somebody will present me with something and I'll say, oh, yeah, no, I agree with that. But I can't think of anything.
Yeah, no, I like that stance. And yeah, I think, like, whenever I have this, like, internal debate, like, 'cause I never really know where to plant my flag. I'm always flip-flopping, 'cause, like, I'll see something and I'll go, oh, that, like, changes my mind or pushes me one direction or another. But I usually kind of come back to the stance of, like, I don't think there should be any kind of body, like a state or governmental body, that's making a decision as to what people can watch. Like, I think, you know, it's more things can be made once, as you said, I'm very much the same, once they're ethically made and stuff like that. But anything can be presented on screen once behind this on set, it's an ethical set. And it's up to people to decide for themselves if that's something that they want to engage with or not. Like, I think that tends to be my stance. But I like what you said about, you know, sometimes things can be done well or not well, because I think this leads into another question, which is something that always interests me as well, is, like, do you think, like, kind of the concept of, like, say, the death of the author can be applied to filmmaking, like, in the sense that, you know, there's the filmmaker, they have, like, their vision or their intention, but then they put the film out into the world, and then people have their readings of the film. Like, do you think one is more, quote unquote, correct than the other? Do they both exist in tandem? Like, what are your thoughts on that one?
It might be controversial to say, I think they both matter. I've heard people argue that the intent of the author or the filmmaker doesn't matter at all, and I don't think that's true. I think it matters very much what a piece of media is trying to say and if it's successful in doing that or not. Because that the intention with which it's made will affect how you see it. It doesn't mean you see it the way it was intended, but the intention behind how it's made gives you the final product. And then what people get away, take away from it is also very, very important. I know this film has been discussed a lot lately in our circles, Megan Is Missing, just because of the new Our Bloody Obsession pod, which is awesome. And This is a good example of that, I think, because the intention behind the filmmaker was to make a public service announcement about teens online. And he's said that in documentaries. And some people feel that that works, and some people feel that that doesn't. But if you think that doesn't work, if you think it's not a successful PSA, it matters that he was trying to make one because it means he didn't nail it. And then you can talk about why not and why didn't that happen. And there's been some good discussions I've read about should a woman have made that film. And so, I think that's a good example of the kinds of conversations that can happen around films that are meant to have a specific authorial like point of view. So I think that they both really do matter, the intent of the film and what you take away from it. I think you can't separate them.
Yeah, no, that's like tends to kind of where I kind of come down to it, mainly because like, when it comes to just being a philosophical person, like I kind of don't like the idea that there's a search for one objective truth, because I'm just like, no, that's hogwash. Everyone has their own subjective experiences. Like, yeah, I very much fall under the camp of, yeah, I don't think there's one objective thing, because that just negates the existence of individual people. But that comes into the films and all that. So I don't think, the death of the author fully exists in the sense that once the film is out there, whatever the author intended, whatever the author's vision was, is dead in the water, no longer exists, no longer matters. But I also don't think that a viewer is 100% correct in what they're reading is. Like, sometimes people can misread a film, because again, this comes back to what I was saying at the outset, a lot of people are not aware of what they're bringing to a film. So if you're not aware of your own subjective experiences, your own kind of subjective biases, then if you engage with a film that might contradict or conflict with those biases, it's going to, like, you'll have a reading based on what your own subjective experience of the world is. And, like, so for example, that's why a lot of white horror fans don't get Jordan Peele's films, because his films are from a very black experience. Like, yes, his films can and be understood by anyone and everyone, but there are certain people, racists, who it's not going to work for. And it comes down to people just not being aware of what they're bringing to a film. But yes, I like that example of Megan is Missing as well, because that is a perfect example of, filmmaker's intention. Does it matter? Does it not? And I like that point, because as you said, I think it does matter to the point of, you can examine was it successful or not with their intention and how it was delivered. Like, I kind of personally think that a PSA film like that would be more impactful being made by someone of the minority the film is focusing on. So in this case, women or teen girls, like, because just watching it, there was one or two scenes in it where I was just like, because that's how, like, kind of linking back to censorship, my kind of approach is always like, I always kind of like to ask the question, like, what's the reason for this being on screen? And there's definitely one or two scenes in Megan is Missing, and also that subgenre in general, rape revenge or sexual assault kind of depictions, where there's a lot of times where I'm asking that question, like, is there a reason for this being here, or is it just to shock me? And usually when it's, I can tell it's just to shock me, it tends to be a cis straight white man who's made that film, and it's kind of like, this is very telling.
And I don't necessarily think shock for shock's sake is bad. I think if you want to be shocked and you seek that out and they want to shock you and that's successful, well, that's a beautiful relationship. You found each other. So sometimes horror fans will bug me when they dismiss a film as, well, that's just shock for shock's sake. And I'm like, why is that, why is that a criticism? Explain to me why a film should do that. But I do think you're right in that you can really tell a difference between when something is there for a reason that supports the story, supports the characters, or something is there to titillate the viewer or shock the viewer. I don't know if you've seen a film called MFA. It's another
No,
rape
but it's on
revenge
my
film.
list.
It's very good. It's very well done. And there is a rape scene in it, But the rape scene is unlike any I've ever seen because it is completely unsexualized, which rape isn't about sex, it's about power.
Yes.
And so I think that film really shows, from the perspective of the victim, that scene really well. And, we could have a whole separate podcast about rape revenge films, and we won't do that today, but I do think that there is something to be said for why is this being shown to me right now, and what do I think of that? Another thing that'll bug me sometimes in films is if they use an abusive man as a lazy reason for us to get behind a female character, or if they want us to very quickly dislike a male character, they'll make him abusive without really exploring what that means to the rest of the film and characterization. That really gets under my skin. I think that can be very lazy. But there can be excellent ways to show abuse on film that are very impactful and moving.
100%. And yeah, and I think maybe that's actually kind of what, like, when I was mentioning earlier about is this here just to shock me? Maybe it's less about that and it's more sometimes, like, so going back, like, and again, we could have an entire episode or series just on rape revenge films, which I might do in the future. But
Maybe.
one last point is, like, telling those stories, there's ways to do it well and there's ways to fail at it. And sometimes it's less, is it here just to shock me? And it's more, maybe I'm thinking this is just lazy filmmaking. As in, there's ways to tell that story with, there's clever ways of doing it. And sometimes it feels like this is just lazy and you're kind of like, you couldn't think of a better way to do it. So you're just going to show it on screen. And maybe that's kind of what my approach is. So it's not, this is just here for shock value, because as you said, if you're seeking that out, that's perfectly good. Like, because I think there is ways to do things that are just, purely shocking visuals and shocking imagery without it being necessarily exploitative and stuff like that. Because I do think they're two different things. So yeah, I think it, like, whether it's like censorship, death of the author, they're all very linked. You can't really kind of separate them, like, when it comes to what we're bringing to a film and what we're seeking from a film. And that kind of leads to, like, a question that actually spins off from the death of the author, because this is also something that a lot of horror fans have to reconcile with. But I want to know what you think, like, about the whole art versus artist thing, like, because I think it is quite, like, linked to death of the author. But, like, do you think that, like, yeah, what are your thoughts on it? Because I know it's a very nuanced topic and it really depends on the
It
person.
is. It is. So first I'll say anyone, I want to just say anyone can decide not to watch anything for any reason. And so if a certain film or a certain filmmaker makes you uncomfortable or disgusted or feel unsafe, I'm never going to push you on that. I think for me, there can be separation between the art and the artist depending on the art. So, what I mean by that, Victor Salva
Oh yes,
and
a
films.
familiar name around these parts.
It's knowing the crimes that he's convicted of and knowing some of the shots in his movies makes me not want to watch those movies. Not just because I don't want him to have my money, which is also true, but because I will not be able to stop thinking about that during those certain shots, and it will make me feel disgusted to be watching that movie. If there is a filmmaker who has committed crimes or done unethical things, but you can watch the movie without thinking about that, I also think that that is an okay decision to make, understanding that films are works of art by many, many, many different people, and that there can be lots of reasons to like a film made by a piece of shit person. So if you can engage with art in a way that you still feel is ethical and you still feel is worth your time, even though it's made by an artist that you don't agree with or that you think is unethical, I believe that that can be true. Sometimes I think people use the phrase, and I don't think you're doing this, Belle, but I think some people use the phrase separate the art from the artist when they want an excuse to like something without engaging in it. And for me, a musical example of that is Michael Jackson. I think it's hard for a lot of people to let go of Michael Jackson's music because they like it so much. So they say, well, I separate from the art from the artist, and then they don't have to think about it. They don't have to engage with it at all. And I don't think that's good. I don't think giving yourself excuses to not engage with the art you're enjoying is a good thing. I don't think that's a good philosophical position. If you can decide, if you think about it and you engage with it and you come to the decision that you still want to listen to Michael Jackson's music and you have arguments to support that, I want to believe that that could be okay. I personally can't enjoy his music anymore, but that's because I'm disgusted when I think about him. So I do think that this is a really super nuanced topic. I think that it can be done, but I do think you have to go to the hard places and take a hard look at what you're doing and decide how you feel about it for yourself, and then be okay with what other people decide too.
100%. And I think this, like, as you said, there is this attitude of like wanting to have an excuse to not have to think about it. And I think this links back to, again, what we kind of both touched on at that, like, throughout this, of people's awareness of themselves when engaging with media. I think a lot of people don't want to critically engage with media, and not in a sense of like being a critic and like, having to review things, but more just turning your critical brain on when you're engaging with art and kind of having that conversation of like actually acknowledging this film, this music, whatever was made by a piece of shit person. I'm acknowledging that, but I'm engaging. Like, so take, for example, Roman Polanski, like, as in, I think it's almost impossible to understand the evolution and history of horror without acknowledging the place that Rosemary's Baby has. Like, as in, that film was so influential and changed so many things. There are so many filmmakers that have that film as a reason that they are directors and stuff like that. So you can't like just say, oh, that film doesn't exist. You can't just write it off. And also, as well, I think it's context dependent. Like, for me, going back to Victor Salva, the fact that he had already been convicted and done time for those crimes before he made the first film, that's like, there's no defending that for me. Like, someone made the decision to be, hey, this is a convicted criminal for really heinous things. We're still going to give him money to make a movie. Whereas, like, say, Polanski or other type of directors who might later on in their career, something has happened and you realize that they're a shitty person. But when the thing was made, they weren't shitty at the time, or there was no allegations out at the time. It changes it, like, of how you engage with it. And I do think, as you said, with films are collaborative pieces. So unless you're a defender of auteur theory and that the author's voice is the only thing that is important when it comes to a film, just because one shitty person was involved doesn't mean every single person was shitty, so it changes it. Like, I think it's harder to separate art from artists when it comes to music, because most, like, singers or band, that's their voice. Those lyrics are them. You can't really separate that. Whereas with films, yes, there was a shitty director involved, but there was lots of other people involved with making it. And, is it fair to kind of say this film should be written away out of history and all their work ignored? Yeah, it's a nuanced one, and one that I like to kind of circle back to, as like why I think you can make that distinction of like you can engage with the art without, necessarily being a supporter of the artist. Is take Harvey Weinstein, for example. He's an deplorable, shitty human who deserves every bad thing to happen. But if you were to go, oh, the studio that he ran or worked for, he was an executive producer with, made so many horror films. If you're t if you if you make the decision that you can't support anything Harvey Weinstein made or had a hand in making, that's most of horror history gone out the window.
Yeah, it is. And if someone wanted to make that decision, I would say, okay, that's okay for you. But you also have to recognize that plenty of us aren't going to make that decision. We're going to engage with it differently. I think Rosemary's Baby is a great example because that story is so important. I think pregnancy horror is really important, and the stories about what happened to pregnant people and how they can have their minds questioned, their rights taken away. Like Rosemary's Baby is never not going to be a super important story. And so I hope that people can recognize that. And even if you don't want to watch it because you're disgusted with Roman Polanski, like, let's not minimize the importance of that story in pregnancy horror history, which is a whole subgenre and a really important one, in my opinion.
Definitely. And also, as well, as far as I can recall, Rosemary's Baby is like an adaptation of a book anyway. So you could make the decision to be, you know what, I'm not going to support this film, but hey, there's a book that has the same messaging and the same story, so I'm going to uplift that. And I think that could be, you know, if that was someone's argument to go, I don't support Polanski's work because of what he's done, you should read the book instead. Like, I could be like, yeah, that's actually a valid argument. More people should read the book, you know? But yeah, I think at the end of the day, it's very nuanced. Everyone has their own perspectives. And once you're not trying to like shit on someone else's decision or try and convince them otherwise and just allow someone to have their decision, as long as their decision isn't, I don't want to think about it, that's when I'd be a little bit side-eyeing and judgy. But any other circumstance, like, you know, let people decide for themselves what they're comfortable with engaging with. And stemming from that, and the whole, like, you know, people should be allowed to just have their own views and perspectives, there's this one type of certain subset of horror fan that does seem to exist, which I find very perplexing. And in my mind, they don't count as horror fans, but there is this attitude of they don't make good horror anymore, and everything being made now is basically blatantly terrible. And I want to know what you think about that. Where do you think that attitude stems from?
Oh, it's so interesting, isn't it? Well, I think this is another group that I think there's always been a problem where nostalgia can trap you. And there's always been different versions of back in my day, this thing was better. You know, music and art, every type of art is a good example of this, where when you come of age and you discover what you love, it's so special to you. And then when things start to change that, it's scary and you feel a part of your identity is being threatened, you know, maybe. And you're like, wait, no, I want this thing I like. And so I think it's probably not new. I think that it is something where like we hear it now. I do think though it is a specific set of horror fans because the people who came of age discovering, usually it's like 80s slashers and like monster movies from around that same time. It's often that type of movie that people like. When I hear someone saying that, that's often their wheelhouse. And I think it's because those people who came of age and discovered horror at that time are now hitting a stage of life where they feel like there's scary change. So I wonder if we could see it in another 20, 30 years when people are like, the only good horror is, you know, A24 slow burns, just because the people who came of age discovering that kind of horror in their horror fandom are hitting a scary nostalgia midlife crisis, whatever you want to call it. So I wonder, and I could be wrong, but I wonder if it's less to do with the kind of horror that is and more to do with that horror fan and where they're at in their life right now. I don't think it's a good stance to have. I mean, it's essentially gatekeeping, and it's okay to say, this is my favorite kind of horror and this is what I prefer to watch. That's fine. It's like if you could just slightly change your attitude to be just a little bit more welcoming and positive, you get to still like all the things you like. So I do think there's fear at the heart of it. I think there's a little bit of fragile identity, like feeling fragile in your identity at the heart of it. more than it really is about any kind of horror genre in particular.
100%. Like, definitely whenever I hear that stance, like, usually the person uttering it is a cisgender straight white man. So I definitely think
Usually,
there's, yeah,
yeah.
usually. So I definitely think there is an element of like, I'm no longer the focus of the stories being told. And like you said,
Yeah.
it's like a resistance to change. There is a slight fear. But I really like that observation you made of like, who knows, in like another 10, 20 years' time, people who came of age during this glut of horror films might be reacting to what's coming out in the future. And like, if you think about it, in a way, we are like, I do think maybe it's because of like coming out of the pandemic or something like that, but we are seeing more films that are very much leaning into being camp and
Yes.
being just dumb, fun horror, but knowing they're dumb and fun and like leaning
Yes.
into it and playing with it. So last year we had Malignant. This year we had Orphan First Kill, which I adored. And I
I need
adore
to
both.
see it.
It's so
I
good.
can't
I
wait.
love it. But I adore both those films. And I have a feeling more of those films are going to be made. Like, I definitely think, Ari Aster, Robert Eggers, those directors aren't going anywhere, and we're get
Absolutely.
100%. So we're still going to get those, as you said, the A24 slow burns. We'll still get like, I don't know whether it's a good or a bad thing that A24 has become this like thing that you say A24 and people know what you mean. I'm just
I
like,
know.
it's like, no, I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing. But that's a tangent. I do, so I do think this type of really, I don't know, visceral, cerebral, slow burn horror is still what we're going to be getting. But I have a feeling as the years kind of go on, maybe reacting to what's happened with the pandemic, we're going to be treated to more of those camp, dumb, fun horror films. And it'll be interesting to see how things cycle through. And I probably do think there might be a glut of like horror fans that love that type of slow burn horror, that are going to be complaining about the state of horror when things move back to that kind of campy, dumb, fun direction. So yeah, I really like that observation. Thank you for that. I'm going to be like, now I'm
Oh,
going to like
sure.
have my binoculars on. I'll be watching for it. I'll be like expecting the signs, like, do my research. But yeah, there's things are interestingly and changing, and it'll be exciting to see
Yes.
how they do change. But yeah, as two kind of closing off questions, because we're coming up to that hour mark now. But the first one, for yourself, what are your own kind of like comfort horror films? Like, if you've had like shit day, shit week, which films that do you turn to because you know you'll have a good time with it? I already have a feeling I'll probably know one or two, but you could surprise me. And then like when you're finished kind of going through those films, the last kind of closing off question is just in general, how do you feel about the future of horror?
Yeah. Well, you certainly know that Saw films are my comfort films. We literally talked for hours about that. Some I haven't talked about as much, but are definitely kind of related to the reasons why, like a similar reasons they're comfort films. The Collector and the Collection. I
I
don't know if
need
you've
to
seen those.
know. I know what they are. I need to seek them out.
I love these films. Love them. If you ever want to talk about them on or off the pod, let me know. They are written and directed by Marcus Dunstan, who was involved in the Saw franchise as well.
Right.
So
Okay.
there's a lot of like similar vibes. And then another one I really love is called VFW, which is a more recent film.
I've heard of it. Again, haven't seen it.
Yeah, by Joe Begos or Begas, who also did Bliss, which I also like, but I love VFW. And the thing that's similar between all these movies that I consider my comfort movies are over the top violence, characters that I love, and I can just escape into them. The violence for me is, it's got to be like unrealistic, over the top. You know, the traps in Saw, there are similar traps in The Collector and The Collection. VFW has like a futuristic dystopian feeling that makes it feel unreal. I don't want realistic violence when I'm looking for escapism.
Yes.
I that that won't be enough escaping for me. So I like to just go into these ridiculous worlds where you're not sure any of it could really happen and just fall in love with my characters and get distracted. So that's kind of all those films hit that for me.
I like that, and I like how you have like a criteria of what you need for it to become a comfort horror film. That's really enjoyable. Like, I know for other people, it's like, it's like almost like a nostalgia thing, as in their comfort
Yeah.
horror film is like, one of the first films they watched, or like they have a particular fond memory. Like, everyone, I love everyone's own criteria for what classifies a comfort horror film. Like, and I love horror fans who are open to their comfort horror films like changing over time as
Oh,
the like
yeah.
as new horror comes out, like more get added. Like, it's never that any get replaced. It's just your list grows as you collect them, like a Pokemon
Yes.
collector.
Yes.
But yeah, I love hearing people talk about their comfort horror films, and I just love that phrase because it's like it's such an oxymoron. Like, of like,
I
hey,
know.
what horrifying thing do I find comfortable and is just going to make me feel safe and seen? And
Yes.
it's beautiful. I love it. But yeah, as like the last closing off question, just how do you feel about the future of horror?
I feel excited. Maybe it's a selfish thing, but I feel like there's always going to be something for me. Partly because I tend to like a lot of horror. I don't strongly dislike much horror out there. And even if I do strongly dislike it, I'm reacting to it. I'm emoting to it. And I go to cinema looking for something to make me emote. So even if I really hate something, I'm like, okay, that's an experience I can think about and reflect on. And I think as the world changes, as cinema changes, storytelling changes, as more people are invited and welcomed into the horror genre, which feels like it's happening, I hope it continues to happen. I feel like we're just going to get more good stuff we've never even thought of before, and it makes me feel excited. So I don't know. Hopefully that ends up being true, but I want to see whatever it is, you know?
Yeah, no, 100%. I like that like resounding message of like hope for the future of horror. I like that. And yeah, like there are times when like, when I think about like, where things are going, like, I like sometimes I see like the way outside of horror and outside of film, the way kind of just general society or culture is moving, and I'm kind of like feel, oh, I fear that we'll have like a regressive swing back or stuff like that. But then I'll see like, I'd literally just watched the other day the new movie So Vam on Shudder by like Alice Mayo McKay, who's like a 17-year-old queer trans horror director, and it's just, it makes me feel hopeful again because it's like, this is someone who's 17 who's made like a feature film. Yes, you can tell it's like a small budget indie film, but there's so much promise there. And I'm just like, that makes me excited because we're just going to get more interesting voices. And thankfully, because of like, places like Shudder, Arrow Video Player, like all these places that are curating horror and are very much dedicated to keeping horror at the forefront of conversation, that can only lead to good things. Like, so yeah, like I'm sometimes that I'll have a feeling of like feeling jaded, but then something, I'll watch something that will make me go, ha, no, I'm excited again. There's more new things coming.
Yes. I don't feel super great about the future of everything else, but the future of horror, I think there's going to be a lot that we can pull from. So
100%.
I'm
Well,
ready.
especially as horror has always been the genre that turns the mirror to society. It's the birth of
Absolutely.
genre. So as things get shit, there will be interesting horror film directors that will be commenting on that. So that can only be interesting. So yeah, I'm like, I hope it doesn't get too shit, but like we could get interesting horror films out of it. So who knows?
Exactly. We'll have to see.
Exactly, but it's a resounding message of mostly cautious hope. But yeah, but before I let you go, where can people find you and support your work?
Yes. Please follow me on Twitter at Ari underscore Hellraiser. I post all my work there. And you can also follow me on Letterboxd if that's your jam at the same name, Ari underscore Hellraiser. So yeah, come chat to me about horror anytime, everybody out there. I love it.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for coming back onto the podcast
Oh,
and
thanks for
to
having me.
oh anytime. And to my guests, keep your eyes and ears peeled for future drops in my Why Horror series.